So from Milton Sampson Agonistes. Sampson is lamenting his blindness. Light, the prime work of God, to me is extinct, and all her various objects of delight annulled, which might in part my grief have eased, inferior to the vilest, now become of man or worm. The vilest here excel me. They creep yet see. I, dark in light exposed to daily fraud, contempt, abuse and wrong, within doors or without, still as a fool in power of others, never in my own, scarce half I seem to live, dead more than half. Oh, dark, 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 amid the blaze of noon, irrecoverably dark, total eclipse without all hope of day. O first created beam, and thou great word, let there be light, and light was over all. Why am I thus bereaved by prime decree? The sun to me is dark and silent as the moon when she deserts the night hid in her vacant interlunar cave. Since light so necessary is to life, and almost life itself, if it be true that light is in the soul, she all in every part, why was the sight to such a tender bore as thy confined so obvious and so easy to be quenched, and not as feeling through all parts diffused, that she might look at will through every pore? So, I had one book in the house that I read incessantly as quite a young child, knowing nothing, of course, about history's meanings. And that was a 19th century copy of Palgrave's Golden Treasury, which has got lots of Herrick, lots of Marvell, Shakespeare, and Milton. And what I found, really to my own surprise, and I've realised this quite lately, was that all this very early incomprehending, not analytic reading, whatever one calls that, kind of, as it were, childish, absorbed, but happily stupefied reading can be, is to constitute, I mean, putting it a bit grandiosely, linguistic forces that seep through you, not as influences, because by influence one would normally think of something more deliberated and conscious and borrowed, but I mean something, as it were, much more primitive, something unrealised, something more to do with a familiarity with an inflection or a repertoire of cadences which you certainly don't acquire or study or absorb with any realisation that that's what's what's going on. So we certainly aren't speaking of anything as it were, noble and specific as influence here. And of course, in a teenagery way, I came to dislike many aspects of Milton's thinking once I'd, you know, become old enough to realise that doctrines were embodied here, and repugnance at, say, the doctrine of right reason, with my, you know, limited adolescent understanding of that, set in. But that's a different matter. I'm thinking now much more of the childish and thoroughly unconscious effects of being steeped in a set of sounds and cadences which, as it were, precede intellectualism and aren't, they're not meditated. They're not meditated. And in fact, I've since come to wonder how much of extremely contemporary late 20th century writing, some of which might be designated as ultramodernist or vanguardist or any of the appalling repertoire of descriptions which such writing might take, actually has as its wellspring readings in 16th and 17th century poetry. I'm thinking, say, of Marvell, Andrew Marvell, and John Ashbery, and John Ashbery's picture of little T.C. in A Garden of Flowers, which is a Marvell title. But anyway, that's just a wild surmise on my part. So, I mean, to come back to the extract, and what I love about this particular extract from Samson Agonistes is that we can pick up all sorts of formal patterns without too much difficulty, and I just mention a few obvious ones. But nevertheless, this extract, with all its muscularity, if you like, of tone, seems to me to exemplify a sort of controlled freedom and to embody a great number of irregularities or features which would sound curious and impossible if you just enumerated them. In the few lines that I read, I counted 6 uses of the adjective dark, apart from the famous triple use, several others, scattered actually, you might think, dangerously close to the original. But there is a confidence in a repetition of dark which carries it. Lines of monosyllables. The sun to me is dark, but light is in the soul, and several others. And the first time that I became consciously aware of the value of using monosyllables in poetry was when I happened to be at a class in Harlem that Ted Berrigan was teaching in the early 1980s, and Ted Berrigan said to his class, try to write just with monosyllables. And of course it works beautifully. And then one finds it pass him in Milton. In the extract that I read, I've always loved that mysterious and sudden break away from the iambic line, where there is a strange quatrain which ends almost with a peculiar rocking motion. And that's the passage beginning, the sun to me is dark and silent as the moon, when she deserts a night hid in her vacant interlunar cave, where each line adds on an extra syllable, and then it arrives back at that iambic again. Chiasmus, the play of opposites, everywhere, heavily everywhere, but without a feeling of being clunky, as I said, with a curious effect of a sort of sinewy freedom. I'm very fond of the line, so obvious and so easy to be quenched, because of that touchingly brilliant use of obvious, which of course comes straight from the Latin obvia, to be in the way of. But it's very beautifully positioned and beautifully lucid. Why was a sight to such a tender ball as thy confined so obvious and so easy to be quenched, writes the blind Milton. And then, of course, is that lovely trick that so many people use, and I certainly have to be careful in my own work not to overuse it so that it's sprinkled everywhere, and that's the double adjective. The moon in this extract is hid in her vacant interlunar cave. And the other remark that I just wanted to make about the whole project comes from the very end of Lycidas, where the speaker, the utterer of the elegy to the drowned Lycidas, has spent an entire day voicing his elegy until the light starts to fade, and Milton says that Milton describes him as twitching his mantle blue tomorrow to fresh fields and pastures new. Milton says that what has been going on is that the rural singer, as it were, has spent his time with eager thought warbling historic lay, with eager thought and not with another eager monosyllable, not with eager breath, not with eager song, but there is deliberation in that monosyllable with eager thought warbling.